Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the House Theater is remounting their award-winning play, United Flight 232. It's the story of the 1989 O'Hare-bound flight that crashed in Sioux City, Iowa, killing 112 people. But what makes this story so remarkable is that 184 people survived, which is somewhat unheard of in our history of air disasters. The play, which is at the Chopin Theater through October 21st, is based on the book by Evanston writer Lawrence Gonzalez. It's called Flight 232, A Story of Disaster and Survival. In the book, Gonzalez interviews survivors of the crash and documents the harrowing moments before, during, and after. One of the stories he tells is that of Chief Flight Attendant Jan Brown. Brown's story is a big part of the stage performance, and she's helped the House Theater in several aspects of the production. The story is one that strikes deep into the hearts and fears of all of us anytime we get on a plane. What would happen if we were faced with this situation? And what goes through your mind when the unthinkable is right in front of you? Joining me tonight at the big table is the chief flight attendant and local resident, Jan Brown. Jan is now an advocate for mandatory child safety seats as a result of her experience with this crash. Jan, thanks for being here. Thanks for being my guest at the big table.
Well, thank you, Justin.
First of all, let's talk about the play. What do you think? Getting great reviews. It's obviously a remount. It's an award winner. You worked with the crew here, of course, from your experiences with Lawrence, but also with the house. What do you think of the play?
Oh, it's very exciting, I think, because Vanessa has done such a truly compassionate, you are there feel to the play.
How'd you get involved?
Well, I think Lawrence, the author, had told me that they were doing a short reading several years ago at the University of Chicago workshop, and asked if I wanted to go, and then I subsequently heard from Vanessa Stallings, the playwright. She invited me. So there was a little trepidation. I'm really basically a rather private person. But I did go, and she asked me what I thought, and also did I want to meet the actress who is going to play me, which really surprised me. I guess my first thought was, would she want to meet me? Would it color her portrayal in any way? But when she walked across, and I saw her walking across the room, my first thought was that she looked so much like my flying partner from that day,
wow.
Susan. And because, of course, there's a big age difference between Brenda and myself. And then the first thing she said to me was, can I give you a hug? And I was like, she had me with the hug. Because that's one of the first things I said to my flying partners, my peers afterwards, that we should all be hugging each other.
This story, and we'll get into it, but to put it on stage, and like I said, the critics back in 2016, and even with the remount, this is one of the best plays to have come out of Chicago in a long time, especially because of the staging of it, and because it's not just about the play, but it's about a lot of things that we think about in life and in moments where our lives flash before our eyes. When you're in a position where you can see it and you can meet the actors and kind of be in a position where your life is on stage. And it's a big part of your life because you're one of the main characters in the show. How does that feel? How does it feel to be able to watch on stage someone who's playing you?
Well, it's really surreal. It isn't anything I could have ever expected. I think after having first met Vanessa and Brenda, if they had questions or anything, I was more than happy to help them because they became child seat advocates, and that will always win me over.
Right.
But it's such a you are there, and I've had such positive feedback from so many of my former flying partners who've seen it, and how it gives passengers an idea of what flight attendants are going through. And I think it just brought us together.
There is something about the play when you're going to do a story about an air disaster like this. It can go in many different directions. And we've seen this done, whether it be through fictional work or nonfiction work throughout time. But this play in Lawrence's book, but when this play really takes the point of view of the flight attendant of, and at least talks about the things that the flight attendant has to do in that position. So when the question, Brenda and others are actually asking you questions about plays, what are they asking you? What are the things that were asked in the pre-production that you could provide to help a play like this?
I think Vanessa came to my house. I think I had her see the tape that we did for our emergency training, how we talked about it. That would give her more of a feel of where we were all because it was taped a year after the crash itself.
Really?
And then it showed in subsequent years to flight attendants who have to go through emergency training every year.
That tape and your experience is part of what flight attendants have to understand, or safety. Yeah.
It's all a learning experience. I know every year when I went, it was very nerve-wracking. And then I told the flight attendants, well, after my experience, going to emergency training is not quite as intimidating and daunting and anxiety-producing. It's just kind of a very low-level prep for the real thing.
Right. Well, the play is on stage through the 21st at the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park. The play is called United Flight 232. In studio with me tonight at the big table is Jan Brown. She was the chief flight attendant on Flight 232, which crashed in Sioux City, Iowa in 1989 in July. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here at the big table. Jan Brown, my guest. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Jan Brown. She's a former flight attendant and an advocate for mandatory child safety seats on airplanes due to her experience on Flight 232, which crashed in Sioux City, Iowa, killing 112 people back in 1989. The experience is now on stage at the House Theater for Remounted show United Flight 232 through October 21st at the Chopin Theater right there on Division. All right. Why'd you want to be a flight attendant? Take us to the beginning of your experience. What got you into this industry?
Well, at about 10 years old, I read a book about a sky hostess, which by the time I was old enough, you had to be 20 then, had moved up to stewardess. In that era, you could be one of three things. You could be a teacher, you could be a nurse, or you could be a secretary. And I couldn't type. I was always in the minus column on words typed, and I couldn't be a nurse because I couldn't put a needle into anybody, or I wasn't sure about the blood then. And I couldn't be a teacher because I was terrified of standing up in front of a class. And so this idea of being a stewardess captured my imagination.
How long were you working in the skies before 1989, before the flight? How long had you had done this for a while? You'd done this for a couple decades, right?
Well, this was my second time around because I had done it initially in the early 60s. And then I, as we had to do if we got married, we had to leave. And then I became a single mother of three children. So I needed a paying job. And I was fortunate enough to be rehired and start all over again at United.
Take us to that morning, 1989. I don't know much about it. I had some friends who've been flight attendants over time, and I know their lives to be hectic, complicated, and flying in one place and finding themselves in 19 different cities in 2 days. Was it similar at that time in 1989? What, before this flight took off to go to O'Hare, was it just a normal day of crisscrossing the country?
Well, it was the fourth day of a four-day trip, and we were on the last leg from Denver to Chicago. We had started the morning in Philadelphia. We had arrived late that evening, and we weren't legal. And the rest of the crew, who were all commuters out of Chicago, were very excited, thinking that we were going to be replaced, and we would just be coming straight from Philadelphia to Chicago and not do the full day's trip. But I knew that the way it worked, that what they would do was they would delay the flight in the morning to make us legal.
What does make us legal mean?
Well, because you have to have a legal rest. It was.
Oh, I see.
We had
labor
eight
stuff,
or
yeah.
9 hours yeah. at the time.
So they would delay the flight to make sure they could use you more for the job. Yeah.
They were able to delay the flight because it was only a matter of maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and which is really tight for us getting real rest. But we had flown from Philadelphia to Denver, and then we proceeded.
Same plane,
left Denver for Chicago, and about midway through, the engine, the number two engine in the tail section of a DC-10 exploded.
286 people on that flight. There's no notice from Philly to Denver that the flight crew is like, there's something, something's going on with this plane. I mean, this was something that really happened split second between Denver and Chicago.
Right. We had no problems going from Philadelphia to Denver, but suddenly I was in the middle of the cabin, and I instinctively, without even thinking about it, sat down and wrapped my arm around an armrest because I didn't know if it was a decompression, in which case anything that's not tied down is getting sucked out.
Had you been in that situation before in your two different stints as a flight attendant where there had been plane trouble and you had had some stress up in the air?
Very minor. We had lost, after takeoff, we had lost that number two engine, and the minute it was a boom, I just had gone back to my jump seat and buckled in.
But you knew from your training, you knew from what that was?
This was a huge explosive sound. I mean, if somebody had been deaf, they would have known something had happened. It was enormous, and we just waited. We experienced an unsteady airplane for maybe a minute or so, and then it leveled out. We were still flying, so we just continued working. I got up because I could see a mother holding her son, her lap child. He was under two. And she looked like she was going to panic. And it was like, there's no panic on my airplanes.
I was going to ask, with the explosion, the sound of the explosion, the engine going out, and we'll get to the panic that would be with the people who are actually flying. But as a flight attendant, as a chief flight attendant, mm-hmm. What's going through your mind? Are you thinking everything's okay? Are you communicating with the pilot? Do you know things that the passenger doesn't know?
Well, not at that point. I just knew that since we were still flying, that people are looking at flight attendants' faces to try to read, should I be worried? Are they worried? Should I be worried? So,
were you worried?
I always practice my best game face, like, no. Loud boom, we're still flying.
But beyond the game face, were you worried at that point?
No, because my thinking at that time was the cockpit gets paid big bucks to take care of the airplane, and I get paid slightly less to take care of the passengers. And so I always keep my eye on the donut instead of the hole. I just went back to work.
Wow.
And then they called me. But when I heard the chime ring, I was one door back from where they were calling, but you can see it throughout the cabin. I knew it was the cockpit calling me, and I knew that meant we had an emergency.
When you put on a game face and you have passengers who a tremendous fear, we all know the fear that goes into flying for so many different people.
Yes.
How hard was it to keep people patient, out of panic, suppress that fear after hearing that boom?
As I said, as long as we were still flying, I didn't worry.
You didn't worry, but what about the passengers?
They were unnerved. They were watching us, and that's why I say, you put on your game face like nothing's wrong. It wasn't until I went to the cockpit and the door opened, and then my whole world changed.
What was that conversation? Pilot told you?
I stepped into the cockpit, and he said, we've lost all hydraulics, which to me means maybe the brakes won't work when we land. But I could see the minute the door opened that this was an extraordinary crisis. It just took my breath away. The only way I've been able to adequately describe it is if you opened a furnace door and that fire, with that flame, that heat from that fire would hit you in the face. I took it in a second that this was the worst thing that could possibly happen. So when I stepped in, part of me froze over to contain the fear. Losing all hydraulics, prepare the cabin, secure the cabin. He said that means pick up all the service items and then prepare the passengers.
It's one thing to have a game face when you don't know what's happening, but now you do.
Now I do.
What was your experience with the passengers when you had to go secure the cabin and be able to face them knowing that this was going to happen?
Well, when I left the cockpit, I always walked through a cabin. I always scanned everybody, looked, smile at somebody, see if anybody looks like as if they need something, whatever. I call it situational awareness. I never looked at anybody. My mind was working my plan that I had to be Cobb. My crew was going to be Cobb, and the passengers were going to be Cobb. I made up my mind, and I wouldn't have thought of that anything else would happen but what I was deeming was going to happen, and that they would know when I told them, because one of the first things you're supposed to do is bring all of your crew together and brief them. Mm-hmm. And if I had done that, that would have been a tip-off, because passengers are very savvy.
Yeah.
They're watching to see what's happening. I totally forgot that we still had a video going, so it just kept playing, so it made things look normal. I went into the first class galley, and I spoke to three of the flight attendants, the two that worked in the forward part and the extra flight attendant that had joined us in Denver. And I told them exactly what the captain had told me. And for some reason, I added, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but be prepared. In other words, be prepared for the unexpected.
Jan Brown, my guest tonight, she is the chief flight attendant, was chief flight attendant for United Flight 232, which is the crash in 1989 in Sioux City, Iowa, that claimed the lives of 112 people. 184 people survived, including Jan. We'll talk about that coming up here. This is all because the play United Flight 232 is on stage at the Chopin Theater through October 21st, a play that's based on the story, Lawrence Gonzalez's book, that Jan is prominently featured in. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on the news. And when we come back, more with Jan Brown here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Jan Brown. She was the chief flight attendant for Flight 232, the flight in 1989 that we all remember crashed in Sioux City, Iowa on its way to O'Hare Airport, killing 112 people, and 184 people survived. The play, United Flight 232, which was mounted in 2016 at the House Theater, is remounted and on stage through October 21st to great reviews. The play is won awards for this story, and it's getting great reviews. It's one of the best off-loop theater shows that Chicago's seen in a long time, at the House Theater, the Chopin Theater, till October 21st. We're talking about that experience with Jan Brown, who was the chief flight attendant. And up to this point, and thank you for sharing this story. I know it's got to be tough to go back and recall some of this stuff, but let's talk about the actual crash. We got to the point where you knew it was going to happen. The plane rerouted itself to Sioux City, tried to land at the airport, and we know what happened as we've seen that image of the plane hit the runway so many different times. Talk about that descent. Talk about that crash. You were there at that point as the plane is coming down. What's going through your mind?
Well, we were briefing the passengers, getting them ready. I have to read it out of a book. My main concern when I had briefed my crew in the forward galley and in the aft galley, and then going back to just doing our job, picking up, acting as if, but it was off, it was different now. And I always remember I went to reach for a tray to continue picking up the snack trays, and my hand was shaking. And years later, I met that passenger. He said,
wow.
I remember when you went to pick up my tray, that I said, well, you must have been one of the first ones that I picked up.
Passengers at that point didn't know what was happening?
No. There was that undercurrent of questioning, but nothing had been verified until the cockpit made an announcement and said that we had lost an engine. And they had done that initially to let the passengers know that we had lost an engine and we'd be a little late getting to Chicago. That was a mild understatement.
Yeah.
And then they came back on and said that the passengers had been briefed. The captain said, I'm not going to kid you. It's going to be rough. Do your best. And at that point, I was just about to start the emergency. But I had leaned in to get water because I realized that my mouth was so dry that when I would start to talk, my lips were going to crack So I had just leaned in. I could reach around the corner at our water faucet in the galley and wet my lips, and he superseded my announcement. And the minute he got off, I went right into it because now the people knew. And when I made that announcement, you could have heard a pin drop. I felt like I have them in the palm of my hands. They are paying attention.
The part of the story that is unheard of is that in most air disasters, when there's a problem with an engine or there's a problem with the plane, it's pretty instantaneous, meaning that there's not a lot of opportunity for people to have the time that was afforded to, and afforded maybe the wrong word, to for you and for the passengers to prepare for this emergency landing. But it also, the introspection, the fear, the emotion that goes along with the time that was allotted. How hard was it to be in a situation where the crash, it wasn't immediate, but you knew it was going to happen?
On the one hand, it gave us the time to do what we needed to do to secure everything, which is paramount because anything that's not secured is going to be flying around. The hardest part was when I finished the emergency preparations with the passengers and stopped to consider, had I covered everything? And then I realized we had lap children, children under two sitting on their parents' lap because we were just about full. And I picked up the microphone and told the parents at this point because I felt that I was going to be telling them to put their child in a very unfamiliar position. That child probably would take a little time to get them settled into that. My crew, in the meantime, had already given them pillows and blankets to buffer them. And when I found myself telling passengers to put their lap children on the floor, I thought, this sounds great in a classroom situation. This has got to be the most ludicrous thing I've ever said in my life. In a real-life situation, I'm telling people, put your child on the floor and hold them there? And should I be saying, let's hope for the best or what? That probably was the moment that I was initiated on a child advocacy.
And I want to get to that,
role.
Too.
But the time that we had until we smashed into the earth was just taken up with securing the cabin, mm-hmm. getting the passengers ready.
With all of the work that you were doing as a chief flight attendant to prepare for this inevitable crash and to prepare people and secure the cabin, did you think about your mortality? Did you think, I'm going to die?
No, I couldn't think about that. I had to keep my eye on the donut and not on the hole. My favorite saying.
The crash itself, as we saw, was fiery. It's one of those things where I read in one of the pieces that the emergency services didn't even rush to the scene because they're like, no one could have survived that. Mm-hmm. A plane flipped over at one point. There was fireballs. I've seen the video, and most of us have, because it was such a huge story in 1989 and beyond. Mm-hmm. Try to take us to that moment where impact happened.
Oh, the impact was... He could have told us over and over that it would be rough. I could never in my wildest dreams have imagined that we could smash into the earth the way we did and still have our body parts connected. I just involuntarily closed my eyes, and then I just thought, there isn't anything I can do right now. I think I'm going to check out for a minute. And I passed out, which I think saved my life, because when we started to roll over, I was... As my passenger seated across from me said, I was engulfed in the flames. And he thought, well, she's a goner. And I said, you know, I had that same thought. And I know that people could look at that, as I have looked at disasters before, and thought, oh, the pain of it all. But I have to tell you, that was the most serene moment of my life, because I realized this is how I'm going to die. And I accepted it completely. The fear was gone. I felt no pain whatsoever. And it was just total acceptance. In fact, for a couple of days, I felt like I'd been rejected from on high. But as quickly as I was engulfed in this flash fire, it left. And then a second later, we stopped. And I was so surprised, because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm still thinking. I'm still alive. Oh, well, let's get out of here. Back to work. The only thing is I had no sense of being upside down. I thought I was working my release, but I was frustrated because it wasn't. It's a rotating dial, which your shoulder harness and your waist harness are all connected. And I heard a male voice say, "Can I help you?" And I said, "I can't get my release." He said that my hand was just brushing over it. And so he pushed me up because I was dead weight into my harness and hit the rotating dial, which he didn't realize when he did that, that it was going to fly off of me. And I landed, I guess, on him. I have no recollection of that part, even though the whole time I was unconscious, I knew what was going on. So it's important when people are unconscious not to talk about them.
The another amazing part of this story is that usually with plane crashes, nobody survives. And 112 people died in this, but miraculously, 184 survived, you being one of them. How difficult was it in that moment where you were released from, you got out of your jump seat and you had, as you just said, had to go back to work? Mm-hmm. How difficult was it for you in that state to, A, get to safety, and B, do your job to help others get to safety?
Oh, it was totally job-focused. The minute I opened my eyes, I knew that airplane in the dark, but now I felt like I was on the dark side of the moon. I couldn't recognize anything. It was pitch black, which was a gorgeous, gorgeous day. Every window would have been covered with dirt or smoke or fire. In the darkness, I thought I saw somebody hanging at a 45-degree angle. It never connected that we were upside down. Because I guess I was just focused on doing the job. I heard somebody say there's, and I was looking for light. That was the primary thing. You know, if there's darkness, the only way out is if we could see light.
Right.
So I heard somebody say there's an opening. So I immediately went towards that voice. And here was this huge opening with cables and all kinds of debris hanging. So I just held it aside and people walked by me. I could have been saying, "Thank you for flying with us today." It was, everybody was in shock, but it was all orderly and just a line of people. One of my flying partners, I could see her coming in before she even got to me. I knew what she was going to say, that she wanted to go back in. My thought was, we have to get out because this could blow up at any minute.
Right.
But it was just get the job done, do the job. I told her, "Get out, get out." I was, don't mess with me.
Jan Brown's my guest. She's a chief flight attendant for United Flight 232, which crashed in Sioux City, Iowa back in 1989. It's the subject of the play, which is the United Flight 232 at the House Theater at the Chopin, running through October 21st. You have dedicated your life to child safety, especially when it comes to flying. And a lot of that has to do with what you firsthand observed with the kids on that flight. There was a promotion going at the time, so there were a lot of children on this flight. Mm-hmm. And safety precautions at the time in 1989, where you could put kids on laps, you don't have to pay for the seats. We still see that today. I mean, there's so many different articles that come out about you don't have to pay for another seat. And but your interest in advocacy comes from what you saw firsthand. And it's unfathomable to think about the tragedy of kids in that situation. So how does that affect your life as you move forward and you become an advocate for what you saw in that experience? It has impacted you.
Well, I'm a strong believer and have had the experience that if you have something bad that happens to you, if you can learn and make something good come from it, then I think that's the best we can do. I see that little boy whose mother I went over to calm, and I know he would have survived because the people around him all survived had he been in a seat.
Right.
She's the first person I met when I was forced to leave the wreckage because the smoke was so, I have never seen anything look so dangerous as this smoke that was roiling along what had been, what was now the ceiling, coming towards my position like a tornado on a horizontal route. I knew I, because everybody had gotten out and I was about to go further in to look, but I knew we're trained if the fire's too hot, the water's too deep, and the smoke is too thick, you have to leave. So I left, and then the first person I met was this mother who had been holding her two-year-old son. And I knew she was headed back to the wreckage, and I just blocked her way. And I said, she said, I have to go back and look for my son. And I said what I thought would stop her. I said, well, you can't go back. There are rescue workers that will find him. And she just looked up at me, and she said, you told me to put my baby on the floor, and I did, and he's gone. And I started to get some feeling back at that point. And I thought, well, I'll live with that for the rest of my life. But I don't want people to feel that I have survivor guilt. This is the issue of, if you couldn't do anything that day, then there is something that you can do to change and make it better. And that was my advocacy began. And also I saw another mother holding her baby girl. And whatever possessed me in shock to go over and ask her if she could hold that, her baby, who had flown into an overhead bin, and a passenger heard her cries and took her out. I just went over and asked her if she was able to hold her, and she said no. And I did meet her later when we both testified before an aviation subcommittee in Washington. But that has pushed me, even though I hate public speaking.
Yeah, I can't thank
you
enough.
I will keep on doing it. I hope I see it before, while I'm still here.
The change in safety for children and on airplanes.
And the fact that this is part of the play encourages me, and it's gratifying.
Is it hard to tell these stories? I'm listening to them. I'm emotional to being in the same room with you. Is it tough? I think about your life, even the years subsequent, short term, now long term, coming up on 30 years coming up here. Is it hard to recall this? Is it something that you just can't forget?
Well, it can also be part of the healing to talk about it towards a positive end. Yes, it is hard. I like to think I'm a compassionate person. I care about all of those people. They were my responsibility, but they were also part of a team. They really were a team. There were people that were just so helpful.
Jan Brown was the chief flight attendant on United Flight 232, which crashed in Sioux City, Iowa, killing 112 people. 184 people survived. It's the story that's on stage, the remount of United Flight 232, the House Theater at the Chopin in Wicker Park, running through October 21st. Jan is also an advocate for child safety seats on airplanes, part of SEAT, Safe Seats for Every Air Traveler. Jan, I can't thank you enough for coming in and being my guest tonight and telling your story here on WGN Radio. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin.